Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
Dr. Augusto Zimmermann is our guest. We're talking about his new book called Christian Foundations of the Common Law. Augusto, before we go any further, this is just volume one and this focuses on England. How long do we have to wait to get the volume all about Australian law?
Look, Neil, this is the first volume of three volumes. The third volume is the one addressing the Australian legal tradition. I hope that very soon this third volume will be available. The first volume is on England, because it's from England that this whole thing started. But the second volume addresses the United States of America, and the third volume is about us in Australia. That tells you that we have lots to say about this subject. I was forced to write three books rather than just one. That is because there is so much to say about the Christian foundations of the common law.
Okay, we're taking calls on 1-800-316-316. You might have a question or a comment about our conversation today. Let's take a call from Frank in Mildura in Victoria. Hello, Frank. Welcome along.
Yeah, g'day.
Frank, what are your thoughts on our conversation today?
Just a quick question for Augusto. With the whole push for it to become a republic and get rid of will that mean we get rid of the Queen, we get rid of God and all associated with it? Will they rewrite the Constitution without God in it and therefore undermining or taking away all of our security and safety that we've had so far?
Good question, Frank. Your thoughts, Augusto?
Well, look, you're totally right to say that the idea of the governor representing the queen connects us with an idea of the ruler having to give an account to God. That's because the coronation ceremony is very clear that the queen is promising to be a defender of the faith. It's a symbolic acknowledgement of the Christian faith. So you are totally right to say that the powers of the governor general show this relevance of Christianity in the legal system. The governor general is actually exercising the executive power as the queen's representative here. And the queen swore allegiance to the Christian faith, and that's part of the coronation ceremony. I must say that, unfortunately, I would say the queen does a very good job as being a good woman, but her son is not necessarily like her, and he's actually promising now that he'll be a defender of faiths rather than the faith. And he's a divorcee, and when he divorced his wife, I think he didn't do on biblical grounds at all. So, unfortunately, I would say that the successors to the queen need to learn that they are there to be defenders of the faith. And if he makes this commitment, the next monarch of England, he has to commit himself to the protection of the Christian faith, because it's a promise that he will make at the coronation ceremony.
Augusto, I think Frank was also asking, with the push for a republic, if we were to move down that road, does that mean a whole new constitution, and would the forces that would be trying to write God out of our legal foundations, would they succeed, do you think?
Well, it is a very dangerous maneuver, because in the end of the day, the constitution would have to be rewritten. And perhaps because we lack in knowledge of history these days, you see the history curriculum is basically dumbing down children in this country. I have just written an article recently on the poor state of history education in schools in Australia. So if you move to republic, perhaps all this beautiful history and this reminder of where our rights and freedoms come from will be even further undermined. And so it can be a Trojan horse for social engineers to actually redesign the country and make it even more secular and provide governments with more power. So it's a bad idea. I don't agree with this idea because I see unintended consequences as a result.
Frank from Mildura, thank you so much for your comments. You can join our conversation on 1-800-316-316. You might have your own thoughts on some of the things being discussed here. Let me come back to one of those trains of thought there that you brought up and quite significantly, strongly have an opinion on, this idea of Prince Charles being the next monarch. If we talk about a fragility of things that could go wrong, is that one thing that could go wrong if Prince Charles assumes the crown and becomes the king, that he actually becomes very syncretistic and across lots of different faiths? How do you think that might actually look for the Commonwealth to come, Augusto?
I don't think it bodes well. Certainly we have the precedent coming from the Archbishop of Canterbury, the previous one, who claimed himself to be also a chief Druid in honor of the Druid tradition. Hopefully he didn't commit child sacrifice in the process, because that's what the Druids used to do. So in a certain sense, you know, it's a very dangerous thing to be forgetting that the roots of your rights and freedoms. Prince Charles, I don't think he has this understanding of the issue properly established in his mind, to the point that he commented about the Syrian crisis, saying that perhaps this is a result of climate change rather than the problem with the radical Islamic movement. So he doesn't have a clue about what's happening in the world, and certainly he has no regard and respect for the institution of marriage. So I think that makes him a very poor role model indeed.
Wow. Well, you might like to make a comment, because lots of things in there from Church of England archbishops participating in all sorts of strange practices, to the possibilities that might happen if Prince Charles becomes king, and that is the likelihood. And interestingly, and only a minute and a half out from news, but of course our Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, who led the Republican push when a referendum was held some decades ago, of course he's all in favour of Prince Charles becoming the next king. Do you think there might be some Republican streak there that gets behind his support for Prince Charles?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised by this. Unfortunately, I must say that when Malcolm Turnbull has an opinion, normally I tend to disagree with this opinion, so I'm not surprised that he makes this sort of comments. What I have to say is that in the end of the day, he is a prime minister, and he has to, first of all, respect all institutions. And certainly it would be good for a prime minister to be reading my book and understanding that his power is not derived from himself or from human beings, but ultimately derived from a benevolent God who gave us citizens the same rights and freedoms that he possesses.
Our special guest is a legal philosopher and constitutional expert who's not afraid to express his opinions about where we are headed as a nation if we don't acknowledge the Christian foundations of Australia. Well, all of these controversies over the past few years, you might be surprised that there is a wonderful stream of rich Christian scholarship that's addressing the important factors that have shaped our nation. We're talking today about those streams that traces many of our current freedoms that can be attributed to this rich seam of Christian influence that's infused the development of what is known as the common law. Dr. Augusto Zimmermann is our guest. He's carefully laid out an account of the Christian roots of the common law, and it appears destined to become a valuable addition to Australian works on legal history. Augusto Zimmermann is Professor of Law at Sheridan College and Professor of Law Adjunct at the University of Notre Dame Australia School of Law in Sydney. He's also President of the West Australian Legal Theory Association. He's Editor-in-Chief of the Western Australian Jurist and is a former Law Reform Commissioner in WA. Augusto, we'll take some calls as they come through, 1-800-316-316. We've talked about England and foundations of the common law. We've talked about those connections to Australia and our early foundations. Let's bring in some discussion about the United States, because they have a common law that also has this basis in the scriptures. What are your reflections on America?
Well, thanks, Neil. This is an important question, and the readers will be able to know far more about this topic in Volume 2 of my collection. But basically what I have to say is that America inherited the English law, including its Christian heritage. Christianity was really central to the lives of the first American settlers, even leading to the American Revolution, because the American Revolution was based on the idea of numerous American founders that they had to fight against a government that suppressed the rights and fundamental rights and freedoms that they claimed to be, and I agree with them, God-given and not state-authorized. So basically, when you think in terms of the American Declaration of Independence, it's very clear the Christian message over there, saying that we are endowed by God with inalienable rights. And amongst these rights, the right to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, because we cannot be necessarily happy, but certainly tyranny and oppression do not lead to happiness. So I think it's a very clear document in the sense that they acknowledge that their rights and freedoms are not provided ultimately by the state, but it is actually the gift of a benevolent God.
Enlarge a little for us, for those who are concerned or interested in this idea of God-given rights. I think sometimes they're talked about as inalienable rights. In other words, the ones that are not written down anywhere, these are the ones we expect that because we are part of the human race that we have, because we're created in the image and likeness of God, because these God-given rights are a protection for all people. How does this protection factor work in there, Augusto? We talk about God-given rights.
Well, that's not so hard to explain, actually. These principles were supported by not only the American founders, but they were supported by the creators of the common law, the first greatest jurists of the common law. These principles about the supremacy of the law over the judiciary and over the legislature. The rule of law doesn't mean the rule of judges, by the way, as it doesn't mean the rule of politicians. It means the rule of the law, and the law should be above even the will of judges and politicians. We are talking about institutional arrangements here, protecting our God-given inalienable rights, rights to life, liberty, and property, and through the creation of government under the law. So these rights impose upon these authorities limits, constitutional limits and rules, which work as a prescription for a system of government under the law that is limited by a natural right of every individual to not be subject to unjust law.
Augusto, you mentioned at the top of the last hour, just before the news, when we were talking about, you said, I hope Malcolm Turnbull does read my book and realizes that he's not in power because of his own doing, but because of God in the way that we talk about the way that our parliament works, because alongside our parliament is our high court. So the courts and the parliament, these obviously are interlinked and yet separate. But how do you see our high court as upholding some of these sorts of God-given rights in Australia? Do you think that high court judges are across the sorts of things you're talking about?
Well, look, in many ways, the whole idea of written down these inalienable rights, as the Americans did via the American Bill of Rights, did not work as they expected. The American founders, they viewed these fundamental rights as pre-existing the formation of government. So they believed that these rights are God-given. They're not doing anything special here because they were just inspired by Blackstone and Cook. And as I say, I referred before, the greatest common lawyers in England. They thought that these rights, apart from the grant of power and authority to civil rulers, because these rights of the individuals are independent from the government. And the government has, in order to obtain its legitimacy, to actually acknowledge these rights and protect them. These are rights basically that are not to be taken away because they are not even God, they are not state given, they are rather God given. So in the language of the American Declaration of Independence, in the language that was acknowledged by the Australian founders, the writers of our Constitution, these rights are not to be removed or to be considered, if I can say, like disregarded, if I can put in a better way, by the laws of this state. So in many ways, what's happening is that since we have lost the foundation, and since we believe, for instance, that there is no such thing as an inalienable right, the rights can actually now be created. And that's why when you win the battle of ideas in a political context, you can actually baptize this victory as a right. The American Supreme Court has done so via the decision in the same-sex marriage case when it decided to say that they are playing God by claiming that same-sex marriage is actually a fundamental right. Well, if it is a fundamental right, it shouldn't be possible to create them, because a fundamental right is something that is inalienable to the individual. To claim that a right is fundamental is to claim to be God.
Okay. Well, when we have rights that pre-exist the government, there's a caution here, because in a secular society that is trying to marginalize Christianity, the idea of rejecting God, and then if you reject God, you actually reject those inalienable rights, those God-given rights. So, so we're really treading on very thin ice, aren't we, if we have that situation where God is being pushed out of the whole legal system, and yes. and that all rights are now negotiable, because that's what we're in at the moment, isn't it?
That's the main problem, because if the right doesn't have the foundation referred to, then this right is actually reduced, if I can say, to this struggle for the best idea according to the perceptions of the momentary perceptions of society. So what we can see is the creation of rights that are actually undermining the real rights. If you have these fake rights all over the place, rights, they are not an indivisible unit. They actually clash among themselves. Think, for instance, about the right to privacy and the right to life. It can actually clash. And when you have a clash of rights, this is actually to be ultimately decided by the courts. And if you create new rights, these rights that can be, for instance, collective rights, they can easily clash with the fundamental rights of the individual. And in a context where there's no real root for these rights, there is no real underpinning for these rights, so philosophically speaking, then what we have is the Darwinian idea that might makes right. So might makes right if you remove or nation tradition for rights and freedoms. It's just a matter of you winning the battle of ideas, imposing your will, and then baptizing what you have obtained as a victory as a right as well.
Augusto, let me take you to when we talk freedoms and rights. Of course, we know that at the moment the Ruddock Freedoms Review is being undertaken. In fact, as I understand, it's the 18th of May that recommendations may be released to the Prime Minister and perhaps publicly. What are your thoughts for what's going on with the way that religious freedoms rights are being discussed right now? And we are perhaps at a crossroads or a fork in the road. We may be about to go in a different direction than we've ever known before. What are your concerns about freedoms and the way that these rights have been eroded?
Look, as a Christian, we understand, and I understand, that God is not forcing you to be committed to Him. Salvation is something that you decide in a certain sense because God gave you what's called free will. And it's not possible to actually love God being forced to do so. So freedom and autonomy is an important thing because you have ultimately the freedom to decide. I think when you talk about religious freedom, we have to be a little bit careful to not think that every single religion is actually good for the society. But I think free speech and freedom of religious communication is very important. So we have to move perhaps this debate to the broader idea of freedom of speech and freedom of communication. Because most of what we discuss in society, it's actually impacted by our Christian beliefs. So when you say, for instance, that a baby should not be killed in the womb of a mother, you can actually take this approach because we believe that ultimately it's God who gave life to this baby, and you have no right to take away this right to life. So I think what we have to do now is to uphold what the Constitution calls the political communication freedom, the freedom of political communication. And it is discrimination to not tolerate religious people to be, let's say, engaged in the political debate and allow the secular speech to be fully protected. It is not tolerable, it's not permissible, according to our Constitution, to treat religious people as third-rate citizens.
Okay, we're taking calls. 1-800-316-316. Let's hear from Chris in Victoria. Hello, Chris. Welcome along.
Neil, Augusto. Yeah, hi. I think our Judeo-Christian constitutions were all set up to keep order, under God, and everything now is, any other laws that they want to bring in are just designed to create chaos. Just like Peter Dutton is having so much trouble with the AAT, these appeals tribunals, when he tries to enforce the law. God said in the last days it'll be like the days of Lot and the days of Noah. The days of Lot, we can already see homosexuality has come in. The days of Noah, they were worshipping everything, worshipping trees, worshipping, all sorts of religions. So, if Prince Charles comes in, I think Sharia law will definitely, be normalised, and, we'll have so many parallel legal frameworks.
Chris, interesting thoughts in there. A response from Augusto.
I think it is fantastic, your point. I think when you talk about the current threats to freedom of religion, it's normally about suppressing the manifestations of the Christian religion. Certainly, it seems that there is an unholy alliance taking place between the radical left and the Muslim radicals. And that's simply because they have a common enemy to destroy, namely the Christians.
Okay, thank you so much to Chris from Victoria. Let's take a call from Shelby in Queensland. Hello, Shelby.
Hey, yes, Augusto, Neil.
Hi.
Praise the Lord for the Vision Radio. And I wish there was more of you, Augusto, because
thank you.
We really need to fight this Judea. The Christians really need to fight this in the name of the Lord. There is so much secular law today. Man has not been able to improve on the Ten Commandments. and as well, we really need to fight. I can't believe that the two major governments have brought in this marriage thing when really there's no other marriage other than man and woman and the true family of children. And, of course, all these other secular laws that we're bringing in above God's laws, I just wish there was more people like yourself, Augusto.
Thank you very much for this.
Shelby, thank you so much for your call. Shelby raises an important point here, because when there is a battle going on, there needs to be lawyers who have an outspokenness, fearlessness like you do, Augusto Zimmerman. But where are those lawyers coming from? I mean, clearly people under your influence are capturing some of your ideas, some of your philosophy, some of your spirit here. But where are the Christian lawyers today?
Well, they are a product of a society. And the Bible tells us very clearly that we should not be taken captive by false and deceptive philosophies that are taught in our law schools. Basically, what I teach, legal theory, I'm probably the only academic in this country, and I hope that I might be wrong, but to teach our common law foundations, to actually address the origins and the roots of the common law system. Unfortunately, what we see in law schools is that the teaching of philosophies that are not derived from the Christian underpinnings of the legal system, that they are not based on the values and principles that brought about this legal system that we call now the common law. I would say that the main problem that we face is that law schools have prepared lawyers to be either upholders of postmodern ideology or perhaps just for them to make money out of people's misery. And certainly, like, the access to justice in Australia is a major problem. You know that if you have a problem with the law, and the laws here produced in Australia are not necessarily good, you have, for instance, like Dramatica can say restrictions of freedom of speech on subjective grounds. It's very important to say that it's almost impossible to uphold a law which depends on subjective feelings. But if you face a problem of this nature, you spend a fortune with lawyers that can ultimately lead to your bankruptcy. Lawyers are very expensive, and so access to justice in Australia is perhaps only affordable to about 10% of the population. We lack in access of to justice in this country as a result of bad laws and the costs of litigation.
Thank you so much to Shelby for your insight, for your comment there. Interestingly, as you start to reflect on those sorts of situations where a legal battle gets very expensive, very drawn out, and very complicated, is it then in the best interests of lawyers who've got their eye on making big dollars not to have the revisiting to this idea of Christian foundations of the common law, which might more easily work out legal problems? Would there be some who would be motivated by their own greed in all of this?
Well, certainly. But another thing, when you talk about such thing as same-sex marriage, you have to understand that the institution of marriage was undermined even prior to the change in the definition of marriage. In Australia, for instance, we have certainly removed one of the Ten Commandments, saying that spouses should never commit adultery. And we have in Australia a system called no fault. And it basically means that a spouse can betray the other spouse. A spouse can commit adultery and perhaps even be rewarded by the system when it comes to the divorce settlement.
And when we talk about those Ten Commandments, and as we discuss those foundations for your book, Christian Foundations, the Common Law, first volume, all about England, those Ten Commandments were pretty important right through the process of the development of English law, and they are still important for us today. What you're saying is, if you do away with those, the complications that happen in the legal system are beyond anyone's imagination.
It is. We have surely... Lost the foundation so that we will not have the chance to protect the institutions and the principles who are derived from these foundations. So in the end of the day, if you remove from the concept of the rule of law the idea that we are not under the rule of politicians, judges, then the recipe for this or the result of this action will inevitably be the undermining of our rights and freedoms, because these freedoms will not be solidly protected. They will be relative and derived from political circumstances.
So it's not a good prognosis for the future when we talk about predictions that moving away from these ideas of a higher law actually gives us laws that are going to be battlefields. Fought over all sorts of trivialities and the complexity of in fact trying to negotiate your way without the idea of inalienable God-given rights to protect all people, and therefore a good thing to be talking about new scholarship that talks about Christian foundations of the common law. But people getting a hold of your book, Connor Court is the publisher, and they need to go to that website, but simply Googling Christian Foundations of the Common Law, people will be able to get a hold of it. It is Volume 1. You mentioned that Volume 2 and Volume 3 are on the way. Augusto, how quick a succession do you think those volumes will appear?
I hope they will appear very, very soon in this succession. I hope that very soon all the three volumes will be available. The Connor Court has, as I say, released the first volume. The first book launch for Volume 1 will be held here in Perth at Sheridan College on the 31st of May at 6 p.m. Then I might fly over to Sydney in order to launch this book also at Notre Dame in Sydney. I think it's on the 28th, but I'm not entirely sure. But these books, then, I hope will be available in bookshops. And it's for a very affordable price, because I will tell you, we need to spread this message, because the price that we pay for our ignorance is actually the undermining of the heritage and the Christian heritage that has given us so many blessings, so many rights and freedoms. I am in this country because I believe God called me for a mission that is to protect the rule of law in this country and to fight for justice and rights and freedoms. So I have a commitment, and that's why the price of the book is quite affordable.
Augusto Zimmerman, and I'll point people to Connor Court, or simply Google Christian Foundations of the Common Law. Dr. Augusto Zimmerman is Professor of Law at Sheridan College and Professor of Law Adjunct at the University of Notre Dame Australia School of Law in Sydney, President of the WA Legal Theory Association. He's Editor-in-Chief of the West Australian Jurist and is a former Law Reform Commissioner in WA. Augusto, always appreciate our conversations. Thank you so much for taking some time to share your thoughts and your heart with our listeners today on 2020.
It's my great pleasure, Neil.
Before you go, thanks for listening.
There's lots more great audio on demand, or you can listen to us live at visionradio.org.au.
And remember, Vision is listener supported. Your donation,
large or small,
will help us continue connecting faith to life for hundreds of thousands of people across Australia and around the world.
Learn more or donate today at visionradio.org.au.